All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, May 26th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is a gloomy 56 degrees with light rain, drizzle, and mist here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show CRISPR. DARPA, Pandemic X, Musk, and Mutant Space MRSA. And we've been looking now for the last two full weeks at bacteria, George Church, DARPA, CRISPR, some of these insane technologies that are now starting to roll out in clinical trials. There are all kinds of different experimental treatments now that I have been seeing sprinkled across the country to be able to target different cancers and different diseases such as HIV. That was the newest one we read about yesterday. To be able to snip them out of the genome where we are infected. It literally boils down to genetic engineering of humans on the fly. We discovered that even back a few years ago, DARPA had been tinkering with some of these technologies in the lab, and we've established that a lot of the sprinkle funding that goes to these institutions, these scientists, these universities and hospitals to research this technology is all coming from some of the same sources every time. It's either going to be DARPA on the name of national security or from some rich tech billionaire or fund that is loaded with tech billionaires. So yesterday we looked at some of the technology that George Church with his CRISPR and now some of these DARPA labs with their Pandemic X exercise. It was titled Removing the Viral Threat, 2 months to stop Pandemic X from taking hold. They now have it's basically sounds like a competition going on where they are looking for participants, for companies and institutions who want to participate in getting an unknown, quote unquote, threat and trying to find a cure to a future pandemic before it ever gets here. And a lot of the ways that they've been able to do this is with this shape-shifting type immune system. And we've talked about that for a long time, but we didn't really have a lot of detail as to how, what, when, and where. But now we're finding out that there are multitudes of ways that we can be manipulated, whether it is manipulating directly human DNA, snipping things out, or if they're going to utilize some sort of bacteria, such as these living therapeutics, gut bacteria that can be programmed as if they were an application, but it's life, and then sent into a human being to be able to do their bidding. Or even better yet, we talked about phages a little bit over the last few days, and phages are actually viruses that infect bacteria that then can go in to the human and do their bidding, and they can manipulate those viruses as well and give them special payloads. So we are at a level now of absolute insanity at a microbial and a DNA level where they have learned to manipulate the human condition. And they're talking about, of course, again, another project of Georgie Porgy Church is to create the synthetic human genome. Now, remember, this whole genome initiative is a lot more than what they're saying. It's not about curing you. That's how they're going to sell it, as the marketing shtick to the public. You know, and they're going to get every Joey, Johnny, Mary to go, oh, look, we can cure. No, no, no. But what it's really about is to get as many of us as possible into the machine, into the database, so they can turn artificial intelligence against those large data points and try to find patterns. See, it's all about patterns. When you can find a pattern, you find the connecting dots. And that's when things start to make sense. You know, I was looking into the brain. You know, we focus on the brain a lot on this show. Georgie Porgie Church is involved in the Brain Initiative as well. And remember, the Brain Initiative is all about reverse engineering the brain, not to cure PTSD and Alzheimer's, which they say. I just saw something really disturbing yesterday, too. And I don't have it here. It was in a feed. But Alzheimer's cases in the last 15 years or so have gone up like 57% or something. It was some huge number. I don't know, I'll have to find that for the notes, but I was really kind of floored at how great that increase was. But anyway, back to the brains of this Brain Initiative, they're telling you is for curing PTSD and neurological disorders and damage from the war machine, as well as this epidemic of dementia-based brain, what do you even want to call them, diseases here in the United States that now, we have no control over, so we better learn all the little chinks in the armor in the human brain. Well, they're also utilizing it to build a synthetic version of the brain, just like everything else that we are seeing. If it is synthetic, it can be owned. And this is where we really need to be concerned. So once they start snipping your DNA in your body, and this is an ethical question we tossed out there a few times now over the last few days, and I really want somebody, if you can help me do a little homework and see if there's anything published out there yet. Because remember, our laws, even internationally, have not caught up with how fast this technology is moving. But will they, the machine, the owners of this technology, first we have Adidas Medicine. I believe they were the ones that won the patent rights to CRISPR, and that would be the group that Georgie Porgie Church is involved with. But there are other companies out there. Jennifer Doudna, I don't remember her company's name, but she also created a company that has some rights to utilizing some of these technologies. There are lots and lots of CRISPR companies coming out. But also remember, we have companies such as Google that are getting into the healthcare marketplace with their Google Verily division. And they got good old Tommy Insel ready to diagnose and cure mental disease on a spectrum just through the sound of your voice on your smartphone. We also have Dr. Watson, IBM. IBM's in the game. They are curing cancer and now learning all about genomics. How interesting is that? All they got to do is turn Watson's Eye of Sauron toward the national or international DNA database. Remember, the U.S. is not the only country that is collecting DNA. I believe I read a while back, maybe Qatar, one of the United Arab Emirates countries was demanding DNA from anyone in the country as well as visitors. So they were putting together a database as well. But remember, this is not just about cures. This is about control. You know, I saw a story yesterday, maybe the day before, of a republishing of somebody's article. I'm not going to mention any names, but if you saw it, you'll know what I'm talking about. This individual has been very vocal in the past about Zika vaccine and fake pandemics and all this other stuff. And I saw a story by him talking about all this gene editing technology and the stuff that's going on right now and how, again, this is just a bunch of hooey that they can't really do this. And until they can show some proof, blah, 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 it's just pie in the sky. And guys, here's the thing. He seemed to be missing the point that the 21st Century Cures Act, which was just literally 6 months ago, opened the door to these technologies being put out there in your face and offered to anyone and everyone if you can pay for it as a part of a clinical trial. So we're not there yet because we're only moving 6 months into the future. There are already treatments out there that are in clinical trials, and we have covered them on the show, and I'm sure there's many more that we haven't even seen that are going on without public scrutiny. We found out from Georgie Porgie Church in a couple different articles that we have read about him that he is quote-unquote advisor on a few projects where these scientists actually use themselves as the test subject because it is so difficult to get the proper signatures. So, I mean, this stuff is going on even if it's not in the daylight. So I would caution poo-pooing what is really happening in this genetic engineering future that we are seeing coming very fast in our faces. And anyone who is going to say that this isn't important and covering this material and reading these headlines aren't important, I'm going to have to say doesn't actually understand what is really going on. You know, I know it's hard. I know it makes your brain hurt to learn all these new terms, and it's really super fucking confusing. But I hate to tell you, just because you don't understand it doesn't mean that this probably isn't the biggest danger to not only human life, but plant life and microbial life and the whole ecosystem of this planet. More dangerous than anything I think we've ever been faced with. This is going to create a world in someone else's image with self-directed human evolution. And it's going to be these rich, powerful megalomaniacs that are directing the future of who lives, who dies, who reproduces, who is a nuisance. I mean, they literally are talking about eradicating 80s Egyptae utilizing gene drives. And that would be Oxitec, Billy Gates, and again, Georgie Porgy Church's technologies. I would not discount the fear and alarm button that we push on this show. And I hate to do that because I know it gets neurochemicals flowing and it's really a negative emotion. We should be all happy and singing rainbows, except it's not rainbows. I don't see any shiny lining in any of this. And the only thing we can do is document what they are doing and how they are trying to turn this into the aisle, except this is the planet of Dr. Moreau. All right, so there was a story. We pretend like we didn't know, but Fox News, believe it or not, I actually was kind of surprised, but it was a republishing of Live Science. But Fox News published a story back in September of 2015 titled, DARPA is developing human biofactories, ding, to brew life-saving vaccines. Now, we've talked about biofactories. They've been doing this, again, at a bacterial level. They've been able to produce certain vitamins and nutrients that I think it's cyanobacteria is one of them that they use to make one of the B vitamins, maybe vitamin B12. I did look into that. We also found out the Department of Energy is doing experimentation utilizing bacteria's biofactories to be able to produce fossil fuels or alternative fuels, I should say. I know they were doing some of that with algae. Well, DARPA funded agencies, groups, institutions such as the Weiss Institute of Biologically Inspired Engineering to create cell assembly lines to be able to mass produce some of these technologies that they've been working on. You had, and I don't remember his name, Craig Venter. We did a couple shows on Craig Venter. Craig Venter was the one that developed the very first synthetic human genome. And he is involved with a lot of this mass production now of synthetic genomes to utilize in research. Well, don't worry about it, guys. September of 2015, the next factory for life-saving drugs could be the human body itself. Now, let's fast forward 2 years. We are talking about Living Therapeutics. This is exactly what Living Therapeutics is all about, is to utilize the human body and potentially the microflora in our guts, or I've read about it using calcium and some of these other little flagellated bacteria that can move around and deliver drugs to cancerous tumors, and that bacillus bacteria, they found that, whoops, it could migrate out of your gut potentially into your lymph system, maybe into your gallbladder or your spleen or your liver. I mean, there definitely is something afoot here, guys. And, you know, we could pretend like this is fantasy. We could pretend like, you know, this is all somebody's pie in the sky idea 100 years into the future. But I'm telling you, it's not. Please stop believing that. And if you haven't researched it enough, I got over 500 shows all documented in the description underneath the video that'll make you believe otherwise. Scientists are developing a new vaccine-making method that co-opts the human body's ability to quickly create antibodies, which is its main weaponry for fighting disease, say researchers with DARPA. A new method of vaccine production would involve giving the body instructions for making certain antibodies. And because the body would be its own bioreactor, the vaccine could be produced much faster than traditional methods, and the result would be a higher level of protection. Waldendorf, who is the clinical geneticist with DARPA, which is a branch of the U.S. Department of Defense charged with developing new technologies for the military, described his research at a technology forum conference. And the current process for producing vaccines takes at least 9 months. We know about that. That's all done in eggs. And then they start experimenting with tobacco. And when the H1N1 swine flu spread in 2009, of course, they pull out that card. Researchers grew the vaccines in mouse ovaries for months before they could produce sufficient quantities of the drug to administer to people. You know, that's an interesting little note there. I forgot about the mouse ovaries. We'd cover that once way back when. But I just saw a story that they have developed now artificial ovaries. So not only do we have artificial wombs, but we now have artificial ovaries. I hope I didn't say arteries. Ovaries. That they think will be useful in the future for reproduction. Careful what you ask for, people, because this is coming to the point where they really will be able to take a look at who is defective and who is not and make a decision as to who is going to reproduce. And reproduction might not even be the yucky type of reproduction that us puny humans do now. You know, it really messes you up physically. At times, some people are lucky and they can just pop them out. But there are other people whose body almost looks at a developing fetus as an infection, I think. That's the conclusion I've come to. And their body and their immune system that may already have issues starts to attack it as if it is a foreign organism. And all hell breaks loose. So you know what? We're not going to deal with that anymore. We have these artificial ways. We just mix it up in a petri dish and pop it into one of these little artificial wombs. And you'll have 9 months, you can come back and get it. Ideally, the body will make vaccines essentially by a harmless protein or an antigen from the outer coat of the virus for the virus itself. In this case of mistaken identity, then spurs your immune system to produce millions of antibodies which latch onto and neutralize the invaders. When scientists crunch numbers, they found the glacially slow production process of vaccines plus the limited effectiveness meant that the 2009 influenza vaccine only protected 1.6% of the 60 million plus Americans who got the flu shot. And you know, again, when I start seeing these studies that point to the ineffectiveness of vaccines, you know, we've had the whooping cough outbreak, but we found out they're shedding. We had issues with the bird flu, but we found out they're shedding. We had issues with the measles. Well, we found out it's not the wild measles potentially that's causing these infections. It is the cultured measles that are part of the disease, that are part of the vaccine, that then could potentially be shed and spread the disease. So guys, you know, when they start pointing to flaws in vaccinations, and we're seeing a few studies now coming out going, oh, thimerosal, you know, some of the old stuff that we already knew potentially caused problems. Remember, problem, reaction, solution. We have a much better way of doing vaccines. Here, eat this CRISPR pill. This actually from 2 years ago sounds a little tamer than what we were talking about yesterday with the CRISPR pill going in and snipping out HIV, snipping out things that make HIV live, literally genetically modifying on the fly, not just manipulating your immune system. So from here, we find out that with some of these technologies, they're doing all kinds of crazy things. We have that CRISPR pill that they were creating that will be able to fight antibiotic resistance, but we found out that it is also going to give them the capability to find all kinds of new hidden treasures within the genome of bacteria to create new medications. We also found out that there were two executive orders. One, and they were both from Obama, one was about fighting superbugs and antibiotic-resistant bacteria because it was such a big potential pandemic issue in the future. We found out there was another one that was all about us keeping the world safe from future pandemics. Well, good thing, because DARPA announced their Pandemic X exercise that is going to put a fast forward and finding ways to respond at lightning speed to a future potential pandemic, something that cannot be controlled by conventional medications or interventions. We have to find some newfangled way to treat it. And hey, 21st Century Cures Act is there, so doors open. And remember, anytime there has been a declared emergency, they can just open the door to that experimental stockpile and share the wealth with a lot of different individuals who happen to be at risk, which might be you. So as this is all happening, though, we discover at the very end of the show, now we have Clapper, who has been declaring CRISPR a potential WMD, yet CRISPR is also potentially our great savior to the next great pandemic that might wipe out humanity. Well, found out Elon Musk, working with NASA, because he has his little SpaceX division, sent up, as part of his last launch, some MRSA, some antibiotic-resistant MRSA to space, to the space station, for them to be able to experiment with it to see what happens when it starts to reproduce in space and become more virulent. They already know that bacteria in a near zero gravity tends to reproduce exponentially, and this will give them like a fast forward as to what may happen with the dangerous already antibiotic resistant MRSA on Earth in the future. Well, guys, as they're doing this, they are already pounding the drums for our next pandemic. And this is just over the last few days. I've been seeing stories about this. Of course, that DARPA Pandemic X was the first, but now over the last 24 hours or so, I think I found three stories. Disease experts reveal their biggest worries about the next pandemic. And you know, when the pandemic drums start beating, they got something up their sleeve. It's been really quiet here in the homeland, and I'm very concerned about all this insane technology that is brewing, all of it having to do with curing you by snippity-snapping, zippity-zapping, or whatever, CRISPRing. I think it is coming. There's a disturbing reality, and this is out of Business Insider from yesterday, May 25th, 2017. There is a disturbing reality that's clear to experts in infectious disease, but the rest of us ignore it on a regular basis. The next pandemic is coming. Ding. New diseases, of course, going to blame it on climate change. New diseases are always on the rise. Viruses and bacteria can mutate, maybe in space even, and become more infectious or deadly or both. And there is a constant risk that new illnesses could find their ways to jump from their host, like that fruit bat and fruit bat tree, or the monkey in Africa, to human hosts. As Bill Gates, ding ding, wrote up in a recent op-ed for Business Insider, he says that, quote, a terrorist attack could involve a creation of a particularly contagious and deadly flu strain. Whether it occurs by a quirk of nature or at the hand of a terrorist, epidemiologists say a fast-moving airborne pathogen could kill more than 30 million people in less than a year, says Gates. Ding, ling, 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 ling. Remember I told you guys, like, probably 5 or 6 years ago, it was right around October, November, December, whatever year it was, maybe 2012, 2011, 2012, there were three stories that I had run across in a technical science publication. One was like National Geographic. One was like there were a couple of the science pubs. One was like Discover Magazine. And I remember the third. And they had all talked about what it would take to create a literal zombie virus. Do you remember that? Remember when the zombie virus thing was big? We all were trying to figure out what they meant by zombie virus. We're like, oh, it's the public. They're all dumb zombies. They don't get it. Oh, look, it's, you know, whatever. And then that big zombie craze and the zombie shows. It was all about the zombie virus. But in these three articles that I had run across, there were real scientists talking about, like, what it would take, what's already out there that could potentially be combined if we had that kind of technology. And back then, we really didn't. Or maybe not in the public eye, we didn't. They still were messing around with genetic modification in the back end. I don't know. We were still kind of infancy in the genome understanding. But they had all postulated what it would take to turn people into some sort of zombie, utilizing something that was easily transmissible between humans that could spread as if it were a pandemic. And probably the most logical one that I had seen was the one where the scientists have talked about using something that was easily transmissible between humans, such as a cold virus, and then taking something such as rabies that eats away at some of those control centers of the brain. It makes you kind of go a little crazy. And integrating that into the cold virus. And I thought to myself, oh my God, that's pretty frightening. Because that really was like just at the cusp, just beyond our reach at that point in time, of becoming a reality, of becoming a possibility in a lab somewhere that then somebody could, oops, accidentally or maybe on purpose, let get out someplace like, you know, a high traffic area such as a mall or an airport in an international city. And with our travel capabilities, would not take very long at all to spread and give it a little bit of a lengthy incubation period of a week or so. And you've got a big ass problem, Clyde. You know, I read, if you haven't read it, I've recommended this before, but I'm going to recommend it again. I think it was 1978 I read this. It was a book by Stephen King, and I know, roll your eyes, Stephen King, but this was like in his days of glory, Stephen King. Psychological horror was stuff that maybe was just a little bit off, but could be a potentiality of a future reality. It was called The Stand. And in Stephen King's The Stand, it took place at the CDC, where they had run across some extremely virulent pathogen, and there was an accident. And one of the scientists involved in the experimentation panicked. And before the alarm bells rang, I'm sure that there was some sort of sensor that maybe detected a breach, he boogied out of containment, got into his car, and took off to go grab his family and run. And during his travels from the CDC to his family, which I believe was somewhere in Texas, he encountered quite a number of individuals on the way. And by the time he got to that little gas station in the outback of Texas, where he was already bloated and fly-ridden, starting to grow maggots in the car, but he somehow was still driven to make it to his family. And he coasted off into the gas pumps. It caused a big explosion if you saw the movie. And the movie was not as good as the book, but I have to say it was probably one of the very few movies that I saw made from an original book that was actually pretty good. I think it was actually made for TV series, maybe 4 or 5 nights, but it was pretty good. If you haven't read it or seen it, I highly, highly recommend it. It was very early on. And I mean, when I start thinking that stuff is already going on, we've talked about the history of biowarfare and Plum Island and some of the crazy stuff that they were doing with utilizing insects as disease vectors and entomological warfare as well, attacking crops, attacking farm animals, and having some of these dangerous pathogens. You know, they've had breaches with that anthrax. They had breaches with smallpox. It was just sitting around in filing cabinets unsecured for 30 years. Whoops! Or sending out 575 shipments of anthrax, which we mentioned happens to be a bacillus bacteria as well, that they thought that they had killed utilizing x-rays, but whoops, it wasn't, because bacillus is a spore bacteria that isn't killed easily. You start to really wonder how we even made it this far. Add to that nuclear explosions, the Manhattan Project, the leftover legacy of the Manhattan Project spread equally across our beautiful country. And then the pollution, Fukushima boiling away, percolating daily right into the Pacific Ocean. You start to wonder, and, you know, into the atmosphere, raining down on different populations as it follows the jet stream. You look at chemtrails and whatever the hell it is they're spraying into the atmosphere, all called solar radiation management. And then you see some of the new reports of people crying Chicken Little over the ozone layer potentially collapsing, which I'm going to say I'm not going to discount, because I started following issues with the ozone layer back in the 80s. And there was that hole over the southern Atlantic Ocean that airlines had to avoid already for probably 15 or 20 years. I also noticed that the UV scale on any of the public National Weather Service websites that pulled data from NOAA and others took the UV scale, which used to be 1 to 10 when we were growing up, and it now is 1 to 15. That made me kind of raise an eyebrow. I'm going to tell you something, guys. Hey, by the way, new little home experiments we're going to do. My husband has been playing as a hobby with robotics and just building himself a little device. He got a breadboard and a few little circuits, and only a few bucks a piece. But we talked about giving robots senses, whether it be vision or hearing or taste or smell or proximity, or being able to detect things in their environment. He built this little thing that can zip around on his desk. Bzz, 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 bzz. He's been able to, like, control it remotely, and he can see, and it can react to its environment when it gets too close to something. It's pretty neat. It's just been a neat little project to have Munchkin involved in as well, because that is going to be the future. But one of the things I brought up the other day was about this UVC leakage that is potentially happening. And, you know, UVC leakage into our atmosphere, the reason why this is important is because UVC is also the wavelength range that they utilize to disinfect places such as hospital rooms where they have these antibiotic-resistant bacterias. Oh, look at how the connection comes in. But they're talking right now that we potentially have high values, high levels of UVC getting through with this potential thinning of our ozone layer. And UVC, what its function does is it kills biological life. So it might be very detrimental to the things living on this planet if it were really true. Well, we did a quick search online yesterday, and for $9, you can get a UVC detector for this little robot. You can plug it right in on the board. So I'm going to do some experiments here, guys. I don't know how accurate it is, but it would be very interesting at least to see. I think actually the sensor itself had A, B, and C. And if you go online and look for even a C detector, you're going to see they're really expensive, like $500, $600. So I'm not going to swear by how accurate this is going to be. But on the other hand, maybe that is all the cost for a UVC sensor is. And these guys are making a 10 bazillion percent markup to put it in a cute little box and give you a digital display. So who knows? But anyway, that was just a side note. So let's get back to the story talking about now. Yes! We are going to have a potential pandemic on our hands. Now, they're going to tell us that we have to be some sort of genetically modified or eat one of these CRISPR pills to cure us if we have a new pandemic. And don't doubt that for 1 second. But what if UVC, ding-a-ling-a-ling, might be a simple cure? What if having a little UVC bubble or having a UVC producer? I had an air purifier one time that had UVC as one of the disinfectors, as well as ozone. What if that's all you'd need? What if you just had a little face mask that had a little air purifier attached to it that used a little UVC generator on it, and you then were able to breathe disinfected air? I'm just saying, you know, it's problem, reaction, solution, and all they got to do is push the extreme fear button. You know how they have already played on that oxytocin button for mothers with just plain vaccines against things such as measles that ruined little Johnny's Disney World vacation. This is going to come very quickly, and it not only is going to be peer pressure, but it is going to be edicted. It is going to be a national emergency, and they will be rounding people up to receive this new treatment. I don't want to go, Johnny. I don't want to go. So I don't know. We need to look at solutions, people. And UVC was one of the more promising things that I came across in our research that we've been doing on this show, as a potential that might be able to protect us from a few things. Anyway, so as Bill Gates wrote, and you know, when they wheel big Bill Gates out to start talking about things and some of the background on Bill Gates and his love for eugenics and cutting down on our carbon quotient, the fact that Bill Gates is chiming in to say, quote, a terrorist attack could involve the creation of a particularly contagious and deadly flu strain. You know that on the end of that, it is exclamated by a wink. So whether it occurs by a quirk of nature or at the hand of a terrorist, epidemiologists say a fast-moving airborne pathogen could kill more than 30 million people in less than a year, said Bill Gates. And they say there is a reasonable probability that the world will experience such an outbreak in the next 10 to 15 years. Five disease experts convened at the American Museum of Natural History to discuss the threat of pandemics. A pandemic is something that stretches like a colossus around the world, an epidemic that affects many parts of the world, says Tom Frieden, and he is the guy at the head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And in many ways, experts' thoughts about pandemics were reassuring. Over time, they say, we've improved how we respond to disease outbreaks by acting quickly to isolate and care for sick patients. And we found out, DARPA, 60 days or less, let's figure out a cure for anything and everything that might ail you. The pandemic of the greatest concern is the pandemic of poverty, says Don Weiss, a medical epidemiologist with the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, during the discussion. And didn't Ben Carson just say that as well? Each expert also explained their biggest worry about the next pandemic. Here are their concerns. And by the way, if poverty really is a pandemic, then the robots taking all the jobs are just going to make it a little bit worse. One of their problems, they said, that is causing a concern is the lack of trust in scientists and experts. Well, Wafa El-Sidra, a professor of epidemiology and medicine at Columbia University, said that given the most recent disregard for scientific fact, like human-caused climate change, for instance, or, I don't know, fake news, she is concerned that people will not heed the experts' warnings. It's because we've lost respect for the machine, and especially when more than 50% of studies published in scientific journals are found to potentially be fraudulent or funded by industry to give them beneficial backing. You know, you got to be concerned about what's out there, and that really is amusing that they talk about that. as one of the big concerns they have, because there was a story that came out, oh, I think it might have been even today, and I really hope I didn't close it. Oh, no, I might have. Hold on. Yes, here it is. It is titled, Researchers Say. Remember, there's this whole neurological component of all this research that is going on that is under the Brain Initiative, but it also has lots of neuroscientists, psychiatrists, psychologists, sociologists looking at our reactions to things to try to figure out how to better manipulate humans. We found out DARPA even has their Narrative Networks project that is going on how to better sell the message to the population to be able to feed us the garbage they want us to believe. There was a story that came out of Science Alert. It actually was from January of 2017. Researchers now say that they have figured out what makes people reject science. And it is not ignorance. Oh, well, good thing. It doesn't mean we have ignorant people. It just means that you people don't know how to believe what we are telling you. One of the biggest cultural shifts we have had was this rise of fake news, where claims with no evidence behind them, like the world is flat. And remember, nice that they brought out that whole issue of the flat earth weirdos out there. Because I really think that that whole flat earth thing was a psychological experiment to see how far they could push gullible people to believe something. But were claims with no evidence, they say, behind them to get shared as fact alongside evidence-based peer-reviewed findings like, you know, climate change is happening. Researchers have coined this trend as the anti-enlightenment movement. So that's what they're going to call us, not the resistant consumers like I had coined, but the anti-enlightenment movement, I guess. That's what digging for truth and asking questions gets you. You are anti-enlightened. And there has been a lot of frustration and finger pointing over who or what is to blame. But a team of psychologists have now identified some key factors that can cause people to reject science. And it has nothing to do with how educated or intelligent they are. In fact, researchers found that people who reject scientific consensus on topics such as climate change, vaccine safety, ding ding, and evolution are generally just as interested in science and as well educated as the rest of us. Well, shouldn't that be a sign then? Shouldn't it be a sign that at least it should start a dialogue where both sides shut up and listen? Because I think that's where the problem is. Everybody just dismisses the other side as completely wrong without ever entertaining the possibility or even looking at all the facts like a lawyer that they are trying to present. The issue is that when it comes to facts, people think more like lawyers, they say, than scientists, which means that they cherry pick the facts and the studies that back up what they already believe to be true. So if someone doesn't think that humans are causing climate change, they ignore the hundreds of studies. So they're saying exactly what I am. Why don't you entertain the other side instead of getting all mad and all angsty and not being able to shut your mouth and yell over the top of each other? Why don't we just shut up for a few minutes and listen and pretend? What do they do? They say suspend your disbelief and pretend you believe it for a minute and make them prove it to you. Make them provide the proof and all the different citations and all the groups who are involved in obtaining that proof to show you beyond a shadow of a doubt that maybe there isn't any collusion. Maybe there isn't an agenda. Maybe there really is some truth in this other view that you haven't gotten out of your self-centered belief system for 1 minute to take a good look at. That's all I'm saying. And if you still find that it is a crock, well, then you can confidently deny that it is true. But until you've done that, you can't do that, can you? Well, so now scientists have figured out what makes us not believe things is true. Put on a seatbelt, because this is where some of this Narrative Networks DARPA-based studies are coming in. And it's all going to revolve around pandemics. And it's all going to revolve around convincing the general public that this new technology, you know, it's combat climate change or to combat disease and pandemics. Or what was the third one they mentioned? I don't know. I already clicked off there. The third one was, I don't know. Whatever the third one was, they're just going to use the science, quote unquote science. They're going to use peer pressure. They're going to use your loved ones as tools to make you the one lone individual who hasn't yet been body snatched. And literally, when we started looking at some of these little programmable bacterias and putting them into our digestive system and the vagus nerve and the enteric nervous system and its direct connect to the brain and its development of neurochemicals, we found out that it really is literally potential body snatching that can be happening. And add to that, then being able to CRISPR living organisms to physically change your genetic makeup some point in the not too distant future. That is now not mere fantasy at all. They cite the lack of trust in scientists and experts. They said that the given disregard for scientific fact, now they are concerned that people will not heed the experts' warnings. I think my biggest worry, and this is that Wafaha El Sidra, is that mistrust of experts in general. And that is worrisome because that has the implications of what we are talking about today. That has implications for everything else. They're learning from the past. Tom Friedson, the CDC chief, said that he is concerned that people will not study responses to recent pandemics enough to improve responses to future ones. So again, come in DARPA with their Pandemic X. The world has a unique opportunity following Ebola, where we sent troops to Africa to address blind spots around the world and to become much safer. Let's roll out the Obama executive order to keep the world safe from pandemics. And if we don't take action very quickly, like within 60 days, again, per DARPA, to close that gap that is being identified, we will lose that opportunity. Antibiotic resistance, ding-a-ling. Lori Garrett, a Pulitzer Prize-winning scientist, journalist, and author of several books on disease and public health, points out a related problem as her primary concern. She says, quote, "I am increasingly very worried about broad-spectrum drug-resistant plasmids, ding, emerging in a huge range of bacterial populations. So let's roll out the CRISPR editing of bacteria with plasmids and bacteriophages and the high probability that we will lose the efficacy of much of our antibiotic armamentarium." Well, that's where the CRISPR drugs comes in. In other words, bacteria around the world are adapting and becoming resistant to our existing antibiotics. And as this continues, so they're ruling out, they're rolling out that elevator pitch for the masses in Business Insider. As this continues, we could return to an era where a simple scratch becomes deadly unless we find new types of antibiotics to stay ahead. And remember, you know, I saw an apocalyptic series at one point. It might have been The Road or something. So there was a book as well where the guy made it through all these different trials and tribulations to actually get to the end, or at least where he had survived, to only die from being infected after getting a scratch. You know, and as these things get out, you know, as they're taking antibiotic resistant MRSA to space, you know, one of these days in the future, we're going to find out that maybe some of that antibiotic resistant bacteria latched onto maybe a mining vessel that's going up to a metallic asteroid to mine $10 bazillion worth of precious metals and then come home to only unleash some super space bacteria that has mutated to a point where there is no cure, starts attacking all humans, all living beings. And the only cure is going to be to maybe even pay $29.95 to get your upgrade to your genome or your immune system or your gut bacteria to be able to combat whatever this new fast-moving scourge could possibly be, known or unknown, in our future. I mean, guys, this is where it's headed. This is exactly where it is headed. You gave me enough permutations to see our potential extremely scary future. And now the fact that just a few days ago they had this big conference with these experts, quote unquote, that are talking about all these very, very same topics that we've outlined over the last 2 weeks leads me to believe that we are 100% on the money as to how we are looking at this. Destruction of species and environments that might hold keys to future medical breakthroughs. Well, Mark Sidall, a curator and principal investigator at the SICG Genomics Lab, said that natural diversity humans are destroying might hold solutions to many of our problems. As a biodiversity specialist here at the Museum of Natural History, my concern is that the next Armitacin, which is a drug for malaria, and where Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation put a ton of their money, or the next cephalosporin, which was discovered in a soil fungus, and that is an antibiotic that they utilize, I know, in children against Lyme disease, or the next ivermectin, which I don't know, but I'm sure it's another antibiotic, which was found in soil bacterium, are going to be wiped out from somebody burning a forest down before somebody figures out what it is. Well, that's where studying the bacterial genome for silenced genes we found out the other day is now a treasure trove in the future of drug production. Don Weiss, which I don't know who he is, says he hopes that the people on the front lines, when a new disease pops up, will have the resources that they need. I would like to shout out to all students out there who want to go into public health and who want to get a job in public health. Just as Trump is slashing the budget for biotechnology, I am hoping, he says, that there will be funding so that we can hire you, and that when I hang up my calculator, I will be able to hand the mantle off to a new crop that will be funded and well supplied for whatever they need to do their job, like, oh, responding to the next grand pandemic. Well, sounds like they have stacked up now a bunch of dominoes that are outlining the next perfect storm. So, out of the publication Futurism comes a story we must prepare for: CRISPR bioterror threats. A new kind of bioterror threat, though the technology promises seemingly innumerable ways to positively impact human life, gene editing is truly a double-edged sword with nearly as many potentially negative consequences as its benefits. Now, an advisory council to Obama was urging the government to start creating countermeasures for the negative use of emerging biotechnologies. Back in November of 2016, the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology wrote a letter to Obama recommending measures to address this potential for harm using these new technologies. The advocates funding the new research into antibiotic and antiviral drugs to combat resistance, see guys, it's all connected, and having a $250 million budget for the stockpile of vaccines, and even more than addressing current threats. This council wants the government to look at the future, and they have called for the establishment of a new government body that creates plans for national biodefense and sets aside $2 billion, with a B, dollars aside in standby funding to address the emerging needs of bioterror threats. Well, there's DARPA's budget for 2017. We are currently in nothing short of a golden age of gene editing, they say, and the advent of CRISPR. And even better, like CRISPR 2.0 sequencing has allowed scientists unprecedented control, ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling, over an organism's genome. We are now actively engineering cures. We talked about yesterday, CRISPR pill for HIV, blood-borne diseases, and even cancer. We read about that too, using CRISPR and other gene editing techniques. Unfortunately, though, this same technology that is engineering future cures can also be used to beef up current diseases and plagues. We are already facing a near crisis with superbugs and antibiotic-resistant viruses, so let's send one to space to make it even more virulent. Let's publish the new bird flu that kills almost 100% of the people infected. So just imagine if an enemy or a rogue agent engineered one with specific resistance to the last line of drugs we use for only worst-case scenarios. And rather than augmenting a current biological threat, why not make one from scratch? A biologist could take a regular virus's DNA and reprogram it to disrupt or repress all kinds of cell functions. Hence, why we should never give up the chinks in the armor. Because, yes, it could be used to cure you, but it could be also used to kill you. They could even create pests that are resistant to chemicals, like I said, entomological warfare, and then use those to attack America's crops. Like, I am almost thinking this whole new stink bug apocalypse happening on the East Coast that came out of shipping crates from China. They are now invading New York, and their favorite food is apples. Oh, can you say that is one of New York's biggest crops? Yes, might be some sort of quiet entomological invasion. But the general rule is that as technology and society develop exponentially, laws and regulations struggle to keep up. All right, guys, well, put that in your pipe and smoke it. Stick to me.